Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is presented by Kroger. More ways to save fresh food, low prices at Kroger.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, let me tell you this off the top of the show. I have two really important announcements coming up in just a couple of minutes that involve Dog Nation Invasion, our big tailgate next Saturday. You don't want to miss this because these are deadlines. Things are about to be done and over with. Your last chance coming up. So I'll tell you about all that coming up here in just a moment. Great to have you today as a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. Let's begin with some breaking news. And we do this show live every morning at 10 a.m. And because of that particular hour, we don't get tons of breaking news on the show. Most of you, 95% of you, listen to the show after it's live anyway. So it wouldn't be breaking to you by the time you hear most of this stuff. But for me, kind of sitting here at the desk, microphone in front of me, I kind of like being a newsman sometimes, starting with some breaking news in the program, and we do have that. The Jacksonville mayor, Lenny Curry, has announced an extension to the contract to keep Georgia, Florida in Jacksonville for a few more years. Curry doing this via social media speech, kind of public statement type deal. He gives the details about how much longer this is going to be there on the Florida First Coast, and obviously he expresses his excitement about that being true. So before we get into the rest of the news for today's show and the rest of the conversation, let's begin with the cocktail party being renewed in Jacksonville for a few more years. Here is Lenny Curry.
I'm excited to announce that we have reached an agreement to keep one of our city's biggest annual events and one of college football's biggest rivalries here on the First Coast. And under our new agreement, that tradition will continue through 2023 with an option to keep the game an additional 2 years until 2025. As mayor and a football fan, I'm excited about what this agreement means for our city. This is more than a game. It's a tradition. Thanks to both university presidents Fox and Moorhead, athletic directors Greg McGarity and Scott Strickland, and the coaches and athletic organizations from both teams. This is a very special rivalry, and Jacksonville is proud to be home of this long-standing tradition.
So that's Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry saying the game going to be at least through 2023 in Jacksonville with an option. And my assumption, based on the way that he said that, is this is a city option to keep the game through 2025. Does not sound like, based on those words, this is an option for either Georgia or Florida to opt out of the deal. But obviously, we'll hear more about the specifics of the contract later on. As I'm speaking to you now, UGA has also officially announced this as well, that Georgia, Florida is going to remain in Jacksonville for at least a few more years and maybe a couple more beyond that, and who knows, maybe a lot more beyond that as well. My opinion on this is that this is the right decision for Georgia for right now. I am a long-standing fan of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. I love the pageantry. I love the party. I love the fun. I like watching Georgia beat up on Florida there in Jacksonville the last couple of years. And obviously, I have a little bit of, I don't want to say bias necessarily, but certainly my preference is this game remains in Jacksonville. However, I'm also someone that talks to thousands of Georgia fans each and every day, and I've certainly heard from plenty of them who say, you know, I used to like the cocktail party, don't like it as much anymore. Or I'm the kind of person that at this stage of my life, I only go to games in Athens. I'm a season ticket holder and I want more value for my season ticket. That means I'd like to see Florida come into my stadium every other year. That's a growing consensus around the Georgia program, to say nothing of Kirby Smart, who has said that he believes would aid Georgia recruiting to have Georgia, Florida in Jacksonville, a chance to host those recruits for a major home game. Now, Georgia pretty much spends more than any other program on recruiting, so the idea they're not giving him what he wants on this particular aspect of the recruiting landscape is, for me, not all that big of a deal for right now. But there's no denying that the future of college football would seem to be changing just a little bit. We know how hot of a ticket Notre Dame was this past year. And providing games like that in the future in your home stadium, doing that while also playing in Jacksonville every year, it gets hard to do that over the course of the long haul. I do acknowledge that one day this tradition that I've come to know and love may not exist anymore. One day it may just be logistically, feasibly impossible to keep playing Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville. But for now, though, it still seems like the right place for this game. And I know that I am just over the moon excited about being there next weekend. Many of you are as well, whether you're staying on Amelia Island or St. Simon's Island or, you know, kind of around the city of Jacksonville, you're just as looking much, you're as looking as much forward to this as I am. So it's going to be there for a few more years. That's the right decision, I think, for me for right now. But admittedly, this may need to change sometime in the future. And if it does, I think that George will be ready to roll with that and usher in a brand new era of this rivalry on campus. But that's still, at least for now, a few years away. Okay, so let's transition now here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger and talk a little bit more about how Georgia actually going to win this game when it's played next Saturday, because that's the thing that's important to the most of you, the majority of the audience here. And it certainly seems like, based on some of the things that Kirby Smart said this week, is that Georgia's going to continue to lean in on what it knows it does well to kind of go out there and beat Florida. Now, admittedly, I've had some skepticism about this. Obviously, I've been one of the people talking about maybe a few aspects of the Georgia offense that need to be a little bit more rounded into better shape and maybe slightly improved upon. But there's no doubt that the nucleus of this is the running game and the offensive line. We heard Chris Doering say that on our program yesterday. Georgia fans have echoed that same sentiment in some form or fashion. Even the Georgia fans who want to see Georgia throw the ball more and throw the ball more effectively, even they, I think, would acknowledge that this is still a team that's going to be at its best when it's running the football well and when the big dominant offensive line is opening a bunch of holes. And to hear Kirby Smart talk, that's exactly what he thought he got on Saturday. And obviously, a lot of us paid attention to what seemed to be some outside runs having great success in the second half, and all of a sudden DeAndre Swift getting a chance to be around the edges, a place where a dynamic athlete like that seems to have more success. But Kirby Smart said, and I thought this was very interesting this week, that when you really look at what went on Saturday, it was not as simple as some fans want to make it out to be. The idea that Georgia ran outside and therefore that's why it's more effective. Kirby says that what you saw in the second half of that game, late stages especially, was really a cumulative effect put together over the course of the entire 60 minutes. Maybe a precursor for Florida as well. Interesting here from Kirby Smart.
Well, I'll be honest with you. It loosens you up when you have to go against our offensive line repeatedly for four quarters. I mean, it just, we're honest with you, it just wears you down. There were a lot of plays that were called in the third and fourth quarter that were successful. I mean, there were some good inside zone plays that were called. There was more movement in general. But I've said it here for 4 years, you don't walk in the SEC and just move people early in the game. It just doesn't happen. You're not just road grading folks out of there. It's a cumulative effect that it takes. And we certainly had a cumulative effect because we ran it better later than earlier.
So better later than earlier, chopping wood for the entirety of the game. That's not the only time Smart made that point this week. Also went into a little bit more detail about that in another instance as well, clearly believing that a big offensive line leaning on guys for the entirety of a game is very tough for any opposing defense to stop, perhaps even Florida's as well.
The outside zone the other night was most effective later in the game. And you have to ask yourself, was the outside zone most effective later in the game? Because you chop wood early in the game, and you're always trying to keep the defense off balance. We ran some swipe plays, some perimeter plays, and you know, some work, some don't. And sometimes they don't work because people don't block right. Sometimes they don't work because the defense is in there, and we're trying to run the plays that work.
So Kirby Smart says we're going to try to run the plays that work. Obviously, he believes that a lot of that's going to involve the running game. A lot of that's going to involve the offensive line. And if you want to go back to before the season began, that's exactly what most of us would have assumed Georgia's game plan would be against Florida, using its offensive line to its advantage. The season has played out a little bit different than some of us would have expected, though, up until this point in time. But from Smart's standpoint, nothing has changed in terms of what he thinks Georgia's bread and butter is going to be. It's going to be that big offensive line. And obviously leading the way there in that regard, two tremendous tackles. Isaiah Wilson on the right side, Andrew Thomas, perhaps the best in the nation, on the left side. As Kirby Smart would explain it, why would you not lean on an offensive line when you've got bookend tackles as good as Thomas and Wilson have been for the Dogs? Here's more from Kirby.
When you line up with two tackles in this league that have played, you're very fortunate because tackles are hard to come by, and good ones are really hard to come by. Do the math. How many 6'6 guys are walking around? That's just not a lot. 6'6, 300 that can move? Very few. So it's hard to find guys like that. We have been blessed. Sam has done a great job recruiting to get those guys. And I mean, they're not perfect either. They have to go against really good players. But I'm very pleased with those guys, and they are great competitors, and they're good leaders.
I think most fans would say, yeah, no problem whatsoever with what Isaiah Wilson's done for Georgia when he's been healthy, what Andrew Thomas has done for the entirety of his career. Admittedly, though, there is some concern from some Georgia fans about the interior of that offensive line. There's even been a lot said over the course of the last couple of weeks about what Trey Hill might be doing at center. Maybe some low snaps at times, maybe not exactly winning the box, so to speak, against the guy lined up directly across from him. Well, much the same way you just heard Smart show plenty of confidence in Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas. This week, given a chance to evaluate Trey Hill, at least publicly, Smart was also pretty complimentary of him, too. Important to keep this in mind as Georgia prepares to use its offensive line to be the tip of the spear for the attack against the Gators next week. Here's Kirby on, at least to a certain extent, the embattled Hill.
The other night, he did a tremendous job in those conditions. I mean, if you think about it, he really didn't have a bad snap. Jake missed the one that was probably head high. Jake would tell you it wasn't a bad snap. So I thought that was big. When you talk about that game and those conditions, Trey knows his warts. He's got to work hard. He's got to strain hard. He's got to continue to fight. He was on a tough guy to block the other night, and we left him singled a lot. That guy played well, but Trey, I thought, in the end, won out on a lot of perimeter run blocks. He's very athletic, getting to the second level, but Trey would be the first to tell you he's got to play better too, and he'll do that.
I mean, let me wrap all this up by saying this. Admittedly, I'm a little skeptical of the idea that more of the keep chopping mentality is what it's going to take to beat Florida and what it's going to take to win the games in the rest of November after that. But Kirby Smart knows what's at stake next Saturday. He knows how important this game is for his legacy as UGA coach, for the playoff implications for Georgia the rest of the year. And we are in a situation now where the play card is in his hand. The coaching decisions rest with him. Apparently, he's going to lean on what he thought was Georgia's strength before the season began, and to a certain extent, that's logic that's hard to argue with. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. We're presented today by our friends at Kroger and live on video. A lot of different ways to get to us, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, we're on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, the worldfamousdognation.com. We're just really glad to have you with us. By the way, speaking of our friends at Kroger, let me tell you about something really fun coming up there. How about getting ready for a Moonlight Madness upcoming this Wednesday at Kroger? It's 4 to 7 p.m. It's a tradition there at Kroger. Many of you getting ready for Halloween, getting stocked up on Halloween candy. This is kind of a celebration of that season. Kroger's going to have some trick-or-treating going on, some cakewalk stuff, some cookie decorating. It's always fun leading into every Halloween. Kroger's all over the city of Atlanta going to be doing this. You can get stocked up for everything you need, maybe even some last-minute decorations. My kids love all the Halloween decoration stuff. They're very into that. And so you can get all that at Kroger and just kind of get ready to go for the season. We're going to get Jeff Sintel coming up here in just a moment. Let me take care of two pieces of business before we get there, though. Dog Nation Invasion, I've been telling you now for a while that we were going to sell out of this eventually. I told you on this on a special video yesterday that we've actually exceeded our original number. We said we're going to cap this thing at 150. We've kind of gone past 150 now, so I've been simply given a deadline of today. By the end of the day today, if you want to be in on Dog Nation Invasion and guarantee yourself a Gator Hater t-shirt, you got to get in on that right now. So website to go to, DogNationInvasion.com. Of course, the whole thing is brought to you by R.S. Andrews, Kroger, and our friends at Peach Pass. Go there, secure your spot, luxury all-inclusive tailgate opportunity, and a Gator Hater t-shirt. It's the most popular thing we've ever done, the Gator Hater t-shirts. You have a chance to get one for yourself, but you've got to get registered, DogNationInvasion.com. They are not going to let me do any more beyond today. I'd kind of been pushing this thing pretty hard. We went over 150, but they have said no more beyond today. Today is the cutoff for that. So get in, be a part of Dog Nation Invasion. Food, beverage, the whole thing, 11:30 to 3:30 next Saturday. Going to be a lot of fun, but you've got to go to DogNationInvasion.com to get that. Also, final day to register for your chance to win the Dog Nation Invasion giveaway, courtesy of our friends at Peach Pass. Let me make sure you have this website there as well. It's DogNation.com/DNI-giveaway. DogNation.com/DNI-giveaway. This is two nights hotel in Jacksonville, two tickets to the game, two tickets to the Dog Nation Invasion tailgate, and a $50 gas card to help get you to Jacksonville. We're going to draw the winner tomorrow. That means you've got to get registered by today, courtesy of our friends at Peach Pass. Super generous for doing this for us, but you've got to get involved and be ready to do that. So go to the website, DogNation.com/DNI-giveaway to be a part of that. We'll get Jeff Sintel here, but before we do, let's go around the doghouse, presented today by my friends at Meriwether and Tharp. And what I'll probably do is I'll do a little bit of this now, and I may stretch some of it to a little bit later on. I just talked a moment ago about the Georgia offensive line and how pivotal that's going to be for the Dogs as it takes on Florida next Saturday. I think as a complement to that, obviously UGA fans want to see more from the passing game as well. And one of the ways in which a more prolific passing attack would be made easier if obviously Lawrence Cager returns to full health for this game, and we're going to be in kind of a wait-and-see approach on that for the next few days. Kirby Smart, though, in talking about Cager this week, celebrating the things that he's done this season, he did make an interesting point about Cager, saying that even when he's not playing, because of some of the intangibles that he brings to the table, he's still a valuable asset for the UGA program. I did think this was interesting from Smart on Cager as we await good news on his health. Here's what he said about Cager as a leader.
He's been a good player for us. I mean, he's been, like Javon Wims, he's been an impact player for sure, but he's probably been more of an impact on that room. You know, we carried him, I guess it was last week, to the Kentucky game. We took him over and used him to use experience with the other guys. I mean, we want him around is what I'm saying, so that even though we knew he wasn't going to play against Kentucky, he was still in the room, impacting those guys. He's just very mature, and he's played a lot of football in his career, and he has a positive impact on those other guys in that room. So he's been good.
So, yeah, listen, he's certainly a leader off the field, but obviously UGA fans want to see that impact that he makes on the field. So we'll hope for good news on Lawrence Cager coming up in the days ahead. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented today by our friends at Merriweather and Tharp. And, of course, I know for many of you this is a time of year where maybe you're thinking about a marriage that's just not quite holding together the way that you hoped that it would. You never dreamed of being in this scenario, but if you find yourself in that scenario now, as I've been telling you now for a while, and I think this is great advice, that you want to have an advocate on your side because, let's face it, you have questions that don't necessarily have easy answers, but the experience from my friends at Merriweather and Tharp, they do have answers to these questions because they've been through scenarios like yours with the rest of their clients thousands and thousands of times. You can lean on their expertise here. Merriweather and Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. And my best advice to you if you find yourself in a unhappy, untenable situation is to reach out to them at a website that you can go to. Very easy to kind of get in touch with them, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That's theatlantadivorceteam.com. That gets you in touch with Merriweather and Tharp. And answers to your tough questions about your specific situation, Merriweather and Tharp can provide that. They're your source for Georgia divorce. We appreciate Merriweather and Tharp being a part of Around the Doghouse. All right, it's Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger here today. We'll preview the big weekend around college football coming up. More from Kirby Smart on Lawrence Cager a little bit later on and what he provides to this UGA wide receiver passing attack. We'll also get Jeff Sintel coming up in a minute as well. In fact, let's go ahead and talk to Jeff Sintel right now.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead. Here's a DogNation.com insider.
A lot going on in recruiting right now, especially coming off the week in which Georgia now reprioritizes its tight ends, or maybe just reclarifies its situation with tight end recruiting after five-star tight end Rick Gilbert surprisingly chose LSU over Alabama and Georgia and a couple other finalists earlier this week. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel about that and a whole lot more. Jeff, before we get into the recruiting part of this, though, obviously breaking news as we came on the air live this morning, Georgia, Florida staying in Jacksonville for at least a few more years. I have said that I believe that's the right decision for UGA for now. I love the cocktail party. I know you have special memories of being there a lot over the years, too. I'll also acknowledge that the landscape around college football is changing, and by the time you get to the end of this new contract that's just been signed, maybe it'll be untenable to keep this game in Jacksonville at that point in time. Maybe that's going to be an impractical thing to do because of the way that home-and-home non-conference scheduling would seem to be becoming more important. But for now, this is a tradition that can be preserved, and since it can be, I think it should be. What's your opinion?
Yeah, Brandon, good morning, everybody. I think really the thing that most people don't recognize about this is, you know, everybody just goes to that check down excuse or rationale, which is recruiting. Well, count me into the part of public opinion that thinks that I don't think Georgia can recruit much better than it has over the last 3 or 4 years. Now, surely there's going to be instances where Georgia would be able to bring in a player with another avenue on a better scheduled weekend for their high school football season to host Georgia, Florida, and Athens. I get that. But as long as this program has a Notre Dame scheduled at a conference and it has heavyweights with strong seasons like an Alabama or an Auburn in a lot of these years, I think the home schedule will be just fine with all that.
Yeah, so let me try to break this into two parts, and then we're going to move on and talk about recruiting. you know, when Kirby says that it would be helpful to have this game in Athens every other year to help with recruiting, I'm certainly respectful of that argument. That's not an, I guess, an invalid argument. However, the offset for me on that is Georgia essentially spends more money on recruiting than any program in college football does. So the idea that Kirby's not getting what he wants in this regard, he's getting just piles and piles of cash to throw at the problem, that to me seems like a reasonable trade-off. However, ultimately, when this thing does get moved, if it indeed does, and I think eventually it's probably going to, Jeff, I think it's going to be more about the changing landscape of which games have value and which games can really fill up a stadium. Georgia, for the most part, has been up to this point impervious to the just lessened demand for tickets around college football. But we saw this year the Notre Dame game was way more popular than most of the home games we've seen in recent years in terms of a ticket demand because people haven't seen it before. You know, it almost seems like, Jeff, even though Georgia Tech's a non-conference game, and I hate to say it this way because it's too flippant, but it's the only way I can think to say it. People are tired of Tech every other year. People are tired of Tennessee every other year. The Georgia-Auburn ticket's kind of a somewhat hot ticket, but you know, there is a certain, I don't even know the word I'm looking for. You know, people are just kind of getting a little bit bored with the same old in Sanford Stadium every other year. Other place around college football, that's an even more significant problem. I think it's going to be a ticket demand thing that eventually pushes Georgia, Florida on campus more so than the challenge of recruiting when you don't have that one extra really hot home game every other year. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, the home schedule is always going to have its druthers where it seems like everybody's on the model now where they're working to, where they want to have one heavyweight out-of-conference opponent and then two other kind of paycheck games every year. And, you know, this is me going to be very ahead of my skis right now, Brandon, as you like to say, but, man, I would love to see a world where Georgia gets more of a Clemson on the annual schedule. And then Georgia Tech might become that once every two or three years game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium at the beginning of the year. I think that solves a lot of problems with Georgia having to have the rivalry game with Auburn. That's a locked-in SEC game. The neutral site with Florida. And then also the end-of-the-year capper with Georgia Tech. I think that game would be so much better in the state for both parties if Georgia played Tech at the beginning of the year, maybe every 2 years at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and that way it would be a 0-0 Georgia versus a 0-0 Georgia Tech. That would sell a lot better, especially for those network TV executives, rather than an 8-1 or a 10-1 Georgia versus a 4-8 or a 5-6 Georgia Tech. That's the vision I see. I know that's really far off, but if you can chisel Tech out of that yearly schedule, then you could add Clemson more often. You could maybe add a Florida State more often. And I think that would be better for that home schedule that all the donors want to see with their season tickets.
I think that's a pretty interesting comment, Jeff. And I think that things like that may be more likely to be considered in the years to come. Let's talk about tight ends here for a moment. Georgia obviously missed out on a Rick Gilbert on earlier this week when he chose LSU. Let me start with this. I want to move on to some other names. You have written at DogNation.com, and you've actually written this now twice, even after the fact, that you don't think that Gilbert will consider a flip anywhere. However, when you initially wrote that, obviously using the sources you have close to him, that was on the basis of we assumed he was likely going to Alabama instead of Georgia. When it's a surprising pick like LSU, hard not to think of other players who've committed there and didn't stick with that commitment. Adam Anderson, Monty Rice. You know, it seems like in reading Gilbert's own words to you, in terms of the tangible reasons he picked living in Baton Rouge the next 3 to 4 years, kind of hard to isolate what really mattered to him more than anything else. It leads me to wonder, even if Georgia's not the beneficiary here, it leads me to wonder, is he really going to stick with this LSU commitment? I guess let me just start with that, and you can put that to rest, and then we'll move on to something else.
Yeah, Brandon, I got 2 points on this. First, let me directly answer your question. I know you like to come up with the imagery, toe-tagging a decision process. Let's be a little bit more positive here on a happy Friday, even though we've got the spooky season around the corner for ghouls and goblins. Man, I think that recruiting has went through the pearly gates, man. I was talking to Eric Gilbert after he made his decision on Wednesday from the College Football Hall of Fame, and we kind of chopped up how likely it was going to be for him to ever flip from LSU. We finally equated it that perhaps I could cover him better on a corner post. The odds of me covering him better on a corner post would be greater
than him flipping away from LSU. Now, we're all going to laugh about that because, obviously, Eric Gilbert is bigger, faster, stronger, taller, and everything to me. But he could potentially fall down. They ain't got no time to flip. So that's why I would say that recruiting, solid. That one's through the pearly gates. He's going to be an LSU Tiger.
All right, so with that in mind, Georgia obviously will turn its attention to five-star Darnell Washington. Now, most Georgia fans have thought that Georgia was in a great spot with Washington anyway. I guess I am a little curious of, since we thought Gilbert was going to Alabama and Alabama didn't get the elite tight end, does Alabama, who I think has tried to get the official visit from Washington before, does Alabama become more of a threat for Washington now that it hasn't gotten a Rick Gilbert?
Yeah, I think Alabama becomes a bigger threat for both Darnell Washington, at least to get an official, and also an official visit from Theo Johnson. Remember, he was kind of dangling that toward the end of his recruitment. I think that's something to think about, Brandon, but here's a point that we put in the Dog Nation forum this morning that I want everybody to get a sense of. Now, I'm gonna bring up a name from last year, and that's the name Luke Ford. To me, Luke Ford, who portaled back home to Illinois, that was an unfortunate situation with his family, his grandfather. He wanted to be back home. You get all that. But for me, a point. But I think also a lot of people are forgetting.
Hold on, I gotta stop you.
Hey, Luke Ford was a size athlete, 6'6".
Hey, can you make the Luke Ford point again, Jeff? Because we got a really bad sell here. Maybe we need to hang up and call you back. But I want to get what you're. I want to get what you're saying about Luke Ford, and we kind of lost you there a little bit. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, Brandon, I can hear you fine, man. What's up?
All right. So start over with the Luke Ford point because we kind of missed that.
Okay, Brandon, can you hear me now? You got me?
I sure can. So start over with the Luke Ford point if you don't mind, because I want to make sure we don't miss this. Go ahead.
So I guess resetting that, I mean, I put this in the Dog Nation forum today that, you know, everybody laments about the Georgia offense these days and what it's missing. They're missing J.J. Holloman off last year's team. He was supposed to be back. He had to transfer out of the program. He was dismissed from the program in June. That's a very valid point. But the thing I don't think people think of regarding the offense and having maybe sharper teeth in 2019 is also Luke Ford. Here's the point I'm making. Number one, Luke Ford was a big size athlete, can make a lot of plays in traffic, could go over the middle of the field. That's one. The second thing there with Luke Ford he could do is he's a tremendous blocker, perimeter blocker out on the edge. You think about him being in the Georgia offense, I think they would get 20% more production from the tight end spot. The other thing people don't realize is when you don't have a Luke Ford shiny, athletic, big athletic toy going over the middle, then you don't have the athlete in your program to showcase what you want to do with the tight end position to the Eric Gilberts, the Darnell Washingtons, and the Theo Johnsons of the world. So I think that hits both ways. I mean, it was an unfortunate situation. He had to transfer back home. He had an ailing grandfather there. He portaled back home. Sadly, he's still not eligible. Thank you, NCAA. But I think people forget about Luke Ford and what a difference he would make in the run game and also in the downfield passing game with this Georgia offense in 2019. We're talking about a top 50 player in the 2018 class who would have been a nice starting complement to Charlie Ward and Eli Wolf in that Georgia offense this year.
So you're saying the absence of Ford makes it a little bit more difficult to sell to, you know, guys that could potentially do the same thing like a Theo Johnson. Is that the point that you're making?
Yeah, that's 2 points. Number one, he's a really effective perimeter blocker. Yeah. Number two, though, is you have Luke Ford out there who can make catches. And Luke Ford is a guy that, you know, one of the things they say to Darnell Washington and Theo Johnson and Eric Gilbert is we don't have guys who can do like things like you do, and that's what we wish we had. So Georgia could have had a better demo model, a better display piece to show everyone about that.
So on Before the Hedge is presented by Kroger each week, you give me multiple choice questions as part of your weekly six-pack. So I'm going to turn the tables on you, and I'm going to give you a multiple choice question. So here are the options for UGA recruiting a tight end. They sign A, just Darnell Washington, B, Washington and Theo Johnson, C, Washington and Mikey Henderson, or D, Washington and fill in the blank, some other tight end. Or I guess I'll just stop right there. I mean, what do you think as of right now the most likely scenario is? I think I have an opinion, but I'm more interested in your opinion. So what do you think the most likely scenario is of the options I just laid out for you?
Yeah, those are all very likely options. I know, Brandon, you would like for me to say Darnell Washington and Theo Johnson and have two of the country's top five tight ends there and call it a great recruiting class. I think what feels most likely right now is a Darnell Washington and also a best player available. And if that best player available becomes a Mikey Henderson Jr., I think that's somebody Georgia needs to go for. We've documented this week on DogNation.com that Georgia has considered Mikey Henderson a priority way back into the summer, way back into the longest time. It just wasn't a knee-jerk or a reading of the green tea leaves type situation, seeing what may or may not be happening with Theo Johnson, still a very contested recruitment right there. I think what Georgia needs to do, especially in this class, is to make sure they get another second tight end body for the 2020 season, because if they just bring in Darnell Washington, Brandon, then that's going to just be four scholarship tight ends for that room. Georgia likes to employ a lot of two tight sets, a lot of A sets, a lot of multiple packages with its tight end. It's going to be very hard to do if anybody gets nicked up and Georgia goes into key SEC games and they only have three scholarship tight ends ready to play. That's why I think they do need that extra guy in this 2020 class that can do a lot of those tight end, flex end type things.
Before we move on, just one more quick moment on this. Would you mind kind of drilling down a little bit more on how you think Theo and Mikey Henderson compare to each other? Because admittedly, some of the things you've said recently have me kind of wondering if Theo is not Big Ten bound, just given the way those programs use tight ends and some of the complimentary things he said coming off some of those visits. So if Georgia is more in the Mikey Henderson business than the Theo Johnson business, you know, what is the difference between these two players? Would you mind drilling down on that just a little bit more?
Yeah, well, I guess the difference is if I'm going to line up Eric Gilbert in that role to give you a breath of my opinion about Theo Johnson. If Eric Gilbert, Theo Johnson, and Darnell Washington all go to college football and they reach the upper tiers of their potential, meaning from a scouting perspective, they hit close to their ceiling after 3 or 4 years in college football, when they're ready to go in the NFL, if all those three men develop to their potential, you're talking about three first-round tight ends, clearly. But you're also talking about, I think Theo Johnson can be the best one of those three, mm-hmm. because he's a combination of the athletic ability, the size, the willingness to get their hands dirty inside. I think Theo has the greatest upside because he's the best pure athlete, but he's also 6'6" like the other guys, actually taller than Eric Gilbert. And he's about 245 pounds now. He'll be 255 in college. 40-inch vertical leap, can run routes very well, and going to run a high 4.5, low 4.6 at 40. He's going to check every box for those who see things like Travis Kelce and what he does every week in the NFL, Jimmy Graham types. I think Mikey Henderson has a different set of potential, more of a unique set of potential. You can kind of see him as one of a potential red zone threat, much the way in baseball people have left-handed, right-handed specialists for certain situations. I think Mikey Henderson Jr. would be a great asset, not just stretch the field downfield the whole time, but mainly in the red zone. He has great leaping ability. He's a former quarterback. He was rated at one time as a quarterback. He can still throw the ball about 60, 65 yards. And he's going to be great in the red zone, especially winning jump balls. This is his first season as a tight end receiver, flex end, slot receiver type in high school football this year. And he's making a lot of plays on contested catches in the end zone. Why is he doing that when he's only 6'2" and about 2.5 and about 238 pounds? Is because he is a highly explosive athlete. He's got a 375-pound power clean. He's got a 540 squat, 360 bench press. Folks, that's a guy that could lift with Nick Chubb right now and not have to take too many plates off when he's having to do that as a high school senior. That's a unique weapon Georgia could have. He's going to have the strength and the ability to fire off the line and block guys, and he's also going to be able to make a lot of plays in the passing game. But he's not going to run the high 4.5, low 4.6. You got to remember, Darnell Washington and Eric Gilbert are both 4.7 guys anyway. I think Mikey Henderson Jr. is a little faster than those guys. The big difference is here, though, is he's not as polished as a receiver as Gilbert, and he's definitely not have the experience and polish right now running routes as a receiver. But I think he would be an effective tight end for Georgia, and probably potentially an all-SEC caliber tight end for type tight end for Georgia. He's just not going to have the gaudy size.
We have got more questions for Jeff Sintel coming up, including a look at Georgia quarterback commit Carson Beck. But first, let me also tell you about my friends at the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades Council. No, for a lot of people who do the kind of construction work for a living, an organization like this is really important because they're dedicated to the work and economic stability of organized construction workers in North America, creating more work opportunities, living wages, and protecting benefits. You can also earn while you learn with no tuition apprentice training. That's $100,000 you can earn while you're serving your apprenticeship. They also have employer-paid pension and wages that are 30% higher than non-union workers. And the good news is, this isn't just for men only. Women, everyone encouraged to apply here. If you're watching on video, you can see it on your screen. If not, I'll read it to you. It's GeorgiaConstructionCareers.com. That's the website, GeorgiaConstructionCareers.com. Or give them a call at 404-584-0005. That's 404-584-0005 to get in touch with my friends at the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades Council. Jeff, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. We just had other things going on. Haven't had a chance to. Your piece the other day about Carson Beck, the UGA quarterback commit, I thought was really interesting because openly kind of being acknowledged that the numbers for Beck thus far this year, maybe not quite as good as they were the previous year and some of the challenge that he's faced with his team there, but also some of the ways in which he's working to overcome that. We haven't talked about Beck on our show in a little bit of time, so would you mind just kind of, I guess, resetting this a bit? I hope people had a chance to read your story at DogNation.com, but kind of give us a little bit of a thumbnail of what you've learned about Beck as of late.
Yeah, so Carson Beck is a guy that's going to have a little bit more tools than even Jake Fromm does right now, especially the tools part. He's a little bit bigger, almost 6'5", 230, a little bit more RPMs on his ball. He does yoga, more of a flexible athlete. He's really looking a little bit like Joe Burrow right now during his senior year. And folks were definitely worried about Carson Beck earlier this year because the first few games of his 2019 season, he wasn't ripping through Florida's highest level of competition like he did last year when he earned Mr. Football. But you do some reporting and you don't just look at the box scores and you find out, you can triangulate some reasons for that. Reason one is he's the only one of only two returning starters on his team. Reason number two is he's only one of only two guys on his offense with a college scholarship offer, a major Division I scholarship offer right now. Those are things that are different at Mandarin High School this year from where they were last year, a year ago when they won the state title. Now, Beck didn't have five stars galore to throw to last year either, but what he had is some two legit Division I scholarship-type receivers. One of those went to Florida International. The other one went to Liberty University. Not the biggest boys at the Power 5 or NCAA big boy conference table, but those were legit D1 athletes. He doesn't have that right now, Brandon. He doesn't even have a senior in the two deep of his wide receiver core right now at Mandarin. And while his completion percentage was hovering around 50%, and while his touchdown to interception ratio has been 1-to-1, he's dealing with a lot of things. He's dealing with, he doesn't have the best offensive line work up front. He's also dealing with the fact that he's going to add his, and this is no damning statement right now about Mandarin High School football in Jacksonville, but that program is dealing with about 4 or 5 drops a game from the wide receiver position. So Carson has had to figure out a different way to play. I watch his film, and he's not putting the velocity on the ball that I saw him do when he was at the Elite 11 surrounded by elite athletes. He's having to kind of relearn to play the position, becoming a better leader, using his footwork more, his flexibility more, using his speed to take some of those RPOs, and instead of getting 4 or 5 yards, getting 8 or 9 or 10 yards and moving the chains. Everybody will look to last week, I thought was an exclamation point for his season so far. He had an ESPNU game going against another team, which was led by a Florida State quarterback commit. He had 5 touchdowns and 1 interception, making a lot of plays when a lot of things weren't there. He is set to graduate early and enroll and be in Athens in January of 2020. Simply put, I don't think the bloom is off the rose of Carson Beck at all. He's just having to deal with a different senior year than that junior tape everybody got to know him from.
Let me finish up with one last thing before we let you go. A lot of folks expected, and this is, I guess, an example of truly, some people say, you know, spoiled Georgia fans. This may be an example of that. There was an expectation coming off of, you know, not getting Gilbert. Oh, well, Georgia may announce a commit as a way of offsetting bad news. Kirby's had a very fun penchant of doing things like that in the past, and maybe some would have thought that maybe some recruiting news would have come after Georgia lost a game on the field a couple of weeks ago. And yet that commitment kind of kind of hasn't come as of yet anyway. Georgia, obviously, at least the fans do, feel like they're in really good position for a few of these elite 2020 recruits, and there's some work being done, obviously, with the 2021 class. But in the way of commitments, it's just sort of hard to know when the next one of those might come. What do you make of the fact that, Jeff, that you know, Georgia is kind of playing the waiting game a lot when it comes to actual commitments, even though we continue to hear lots of good news in terms of how so-called possible silent commits feel about the program and how some of the 2021 guys are certainly seeming to line up to be on campus a whole bunch, which is obviously the precursor to eventual college decisions as it is, but not necessarily having that next commit in the chamber, so to speak. What do you make of that situation right now?
Brandon, I see what you're trying to do on a Friday, but I've got two rationales for people to think about this. Number one, I think Kirby Smart's focus right now is where it should be. It's on beating Florida. It's on getting better. It's on recovering and restoring the momentum of the program with the 2019 season. But folks got to understand that Kirby Smart and Georgia in the 2020 recruiting class, especially the rest of the way, is we're going on like, I think, 75 days since Cedric Von Prawn Granger committed on August the 17th. Here's what's different. Kirby Smart is kind of like that mom that has her Christmas tree up on November the 1st and already has a gaggle of presents on underneath. And the kids and the family have got to sit there and walk by those presents and look at those presents for the next two or three, the next 6 or 7 weeks until they get to open them. What I mean by that, guys, is I think this class has a lot of guys that are going to make their decisions at predetermined finish lines and decision dates, much like Tyreek Stevenson did for Georgia last year. These are guys that are thinking heavily about Georgia, and Georgia is a major contender. Georgia's in a good spot with a lot of these guys, but they're going to wait because they've wanted their All-American Day, their hat ceremony, their nationally televised spot to make their decision. And, you know, Brandon, it may be uncomfortable, and people might be wishing for momentum. I think that's just not going to happen right now with the 2020 class with a lot of guys, except for maybe two or three guys whose timelines do not go all the way down to the All-American game. And then a lot of people go, well, can Georgia pull out a big-time 2021? Well, a lot of those guys don't want to make their decisions right now, especially during their junior year. And even though they may be close to feeling Georgia or eventually pulling the trigger to Georgia, they want to take a little bit more time with it. And, again, it's going to be a little bit different when Georgia recruits guys, especially in-state now in the 2020 cycle and going forward. They're going to wait until that senior year, a lot closer through that junior year, till that junior year film is out, before maybe they pull the trigger on those mid-four-star commitments for the class of 2021.
All right, Jeff, great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. We certainly appreciate your recruiting information. Looking forward to seeing you a lot next week. Of course, live at the brand-new Kroger on Ponce next Wednesday for Before the Hedges. I can't wait for that. And then heading towards Jacksonville for Dog Nation Invasion after that. Looking forward to all that next week, Jeff. So rest up this weekend so you can be ready.
All right, everybody. Remind Brandon on the show on all of his platforms this week, he's got to pack Eddie.
Oh, listen, Eddie will be in Jacksonville. Don't you worry about that. Now, Kathy Aquavia Green, one of our great Facebook commenters, said that she thought Eddie was looking particularly salty today, kind of wearing a little bit more of a scowl on his face. All that lets you know is our buddy Eddie, the unofficial mascot of Dog Nation Daily, he's getting ready for next Saturday. He's got a lot at stake. He holds this Gator Hater sign every single day as a reminder of how he feels about the Georgia-Florida rivalry. So you better believe that being down there in Duval next week, Eddie is going to be ready to do all of that.
I hope you'll be with us at our favorite barbecue spot on Friday afternoon, sir.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Jeff. I look forward to seeing you all next week.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Boy, enjoy having Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger on a Friday. Good recruiting stuff from him. Update on Carson Beck and kind of an evaluation of where things are going to go with this tight end position. I think it's really interesting from Jeff Sintel there in that regard. We'll do our picks for the week and kind of update you on the big weekend to come. It's all brought to you by MyBookie. It's our MyBookie Best Bets, and you can get some best bets down this weekend as well. Make the games this weekend more exciting by getting some action down. Put your money where your mouth is in terms of who you think's going to win. Many of you are actually really good at picking these games, so why not make a profit on that? And why not make a profit before you even make your first pick with MyBookie? Because when you use the promo code DogNation, That's spelled the way it's supposed to be, all one word, D-A-W-G. Find MyBookie online. They're going to give you a big first deposit bonus. You can get like up to $1,000. You can get your first deposit doubled. I mean, they have some great player perks. Really, not just that, but even beyond, as you get involved with MyBookie, they're known for the best player perks in the industry. They have the fast, no-hassle payout when you win. So get involved this weekend. Use the promo code DOGNATION to open up your account. Find MyBookie online, and then promo code DOGNATION. After that, you play, you win, you get paid. It's as simple as that. So let's run through the top games of the weekend. I'll give you my sure-to-be-wrong opinions on these, and then you can either fade me and make some money or just simply laugh at me when I'm wrong. But here's who I like this weekend. I like A&M at home against Mississippi State. Number about 10.5, depending on where you find it. Here's what you need to know. Jimbo Fisher has actually been better against the spread than you might think. Some people think about him as a minor disappointment thus far at A&M. Vegas doesn't necessarily feel that way. He's 13-7 in his last 20 against the spread, covering at about a 65% clip. Just 5-7 against the SEC against the spread, but nonetheless, he's been great in this scenario. When favored by double digits, he's 6-0 against the spread thus far. Conversely, under Joe Moorhead, Mississippi State has not been much of a road dog. 0-3 against the spread under Joe Moorhead when they are the point spread underdog. Of course, a couple things to note about this game. Aggies looking for back-to-back wins for just the first time this season. Of course, for Joe Moorhead, there's the looming cloud of is he even going to be back at Mississippi State again next year. Another 10.5-point favorite, the game of the day, is in Baton Rouge for Auburn and LSU. LSU is my pick to win the SEC West, but that does not believe I believe this game is going to be easy. In fact, I don't. Given the number, 10.5, I'm going to take Auburn here in this spot. I know there's a lot been made about the fact that Auburn hasn't won here since 1999. The truth is, Gus Malzahn has been about as good against LSU as you might expect. He's 3-3 against the spread in his six games dating back to his first year in 2013. Just 2-4 straight up, but LSU's one of the top programs in college football, so that certainly makes some sense. He did have a high-profile loss at LSU in 2017 when Auburn was one of the best teams in the country, not getting it done in Death Valley there that day. But he's also been 4-3 against the spread as a double-digit underdog during his career. They've won twice in that scenario, going back to 2013, Malzahn's first year. Orgeron has been good against the spread. He's 17-7-1 overall in SEC games, but not always great as a double-digit favorite at home. Some of that stuff about Death Valley being the place dreams go to die, not always as far as Vegas is concerned. LSU just 7-8-1 as a double-digit-plus home favorite under Ed Orgeron. You look at what LSU did against Florida. They ran the ball really well. You can't beat Auburn in a one-dimensional situation. As good as Joe Burrow is going to be and has been, you're going to have to find some of that running game that you found against Florida to do well against Auburn. The fact of the matter is Auburn just doesn't yield very many yards on the ground, just 3.1 yards per carry on the season. That's enough to keep this game close. I'll take Auburn as a MyBookie best bet. South Carolina goes to Tennessee. Tennessee about a 4.5-point underdog. This line has moved a little bit here this week. I liked this game better when Brian Maurer was the quarterback for Tennessee, and I would certainly like it better at 6 than where it is right now. But nonetheless, Tennessee is still my pick here. Maybe somewhat surprising, but the fact of the matter is Tennessee has played better as of late. They are just 2-4 against the spread as a home underdog under Pruitt dating back to last year, but they won outright as a home dog against Mississippi State in their most recent home game. And if not for the Eric Stokes hit on the quarterback, and if not for the scoop and score by Tay Crowder, this would have been a Tennessee team we're talking about covering in 4 of its last 5. In other words, Vols have played a little bit better as of late, but it's been hard to tell because it's come against Georgia, it's come against Alabama, two teams they couldn't beat straight up on the field. But Vols quietly starting to play a little bit better. Obviously, a lot has been said about the fact that Muschamp has historically been good against Tennessee, including winning 3 straight as South Carolina coach, but this game was closer than the experts thought it would be last year. As a 10.5-point underdog, Tennessee did keep it within a field goal, losing 27-24. That is enough for me, even though Muschamp historically is very good against the spread at South Carolina. That's enough for me, believe it or not, to actually take Tennessee here. I'll run through a couple of other of these pretty quick. I think Alabama is a 32-point favorite against Arkansas. The number to know, Saban in his career is not great against the spread versus Arkansas. In 12 previous meetings, he's just 6-6 in that situation. Arkansas has also beat the Vegas number 2 straight years against Alabama. With Mac Jones on the field for Alabama, they didn't cover a 30-plus point number last week. That's enough for me. I'll take Arkansas plus the points here as a MyBookie best bet. play of the week for me, maybe Missouri on the road at Kentucky. A Wildcats, a 10-point underdog. This is a bounce-back situation for Missouri. They've done great in that situation the last three times they've been there. That may be all you need to know about that. And, of course, the two big games nationally. Let's talk a little bit about Wisconsin, Ohio State, Notre Dame at Michigan. I just think these games are fun to watch, and not having, you know, Georgia playing on Saturday, a chance to settle in and watch some college football, you may enjoy that. For now, we'll make that our MyBookie Best Bets and our SEC through. And let me transition here on Dog Nation Daily and get back to the Georgia Bulldogs here in a moment. And I want to go back to what we were discussing a little earlier in our show, the situation involving Lawrence Cager. We had Cliff Payne in our YouTube comment section a moment ago said he really hopes to have Cager back healthy again for that Florida game, and I do think that's important. Smart, you heard him a bit earlier in our show say that even when Cager's not playing, he's still a valuable leader to this program. We would all assume that's true, and I think we all probably believe that, but Cager's biggest impact is made on the field. One of the things that he does really well is use his body to kind of beat that press coverage, get open, you know, body position, the back shoulder throws. He and Jake Fromm have made a living doing that this year. Kirby says you still need more of that from some of those young players as well. Sometimes experience helps, but sometimes it's just about kind of going out there and getting it done. Here's a little more from Kirby on the receiver position, which will be in the spotlight next Saturday against a good Florida crop of defensive backs.
You get better when you play, certainly. I think some guys come in and they get off press really well. If they're really, really talented and they're good at it, I think that's something that experience brings value. Lawrence has a lot of experience. He's been around a lot of good wideouts when he played at Miami. He's physically stronger and bigger than a lot of other guys. So he's able to use his body to help him against those press guys. And everybody's still working to improve that. I mean, shoot, we're working at defensive back to try to press better so that we can compete and do a better job defensively. So, I mean, everybody's trying to get better at it. Cager is a great example of how to do that because he's done it for a long time.
So near the beginning of our show, I said it certainly sounds like Kirby Smart's going to lean heavily on his offensive line next week, given the reputation that group has. That seems to be with good reason. But we also know that more is going to be required of these Georgia wide receivers. Beating the press coverage that Kirby Smart talked about, obviously that job for that group is made easier if Cager is playing. But in terms of winning those one-on-one battles, it's also likely going to be true that some young players are going to be called upon to do that next week against the Gators. And I certainly think they can be equal to that challenge, but I'm obviously curious to see how that actually plays out on the field. Speaking of Florida and everything else to come for Georgia, let's preview the weekend now with our Kroger kickoff. You know, you kick off the weekend at Kroger by getting stocked up or whatever you have going on, whether it be some game-watching parties this weekend or whatever else. And, of course, we kick off the weekend here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, each and every Friday there as well. Usually it's looking at the weekend to come for UGA Athletics. Let's actually kind of broaden that out just a bit more here now and talk about the next few weekends for Georgia, because as we've said on Dog Nation Daily this week, that even beyond Florida next Saturday, things don't get that much easier for Georgia throughout the rest of the regular season. It's obviously Florida on November 2nd, followed by Missouri on November 9th, Auburn on November 16th, Texas A&M on November 23rd, and then, of course, the classic clean old-fashioned hate rivalry, Georgia Tech, to close out the regular season on November 30th. So after two bye weeks already in kind of the earlier portion of the year, Georgia will play the rest of November without any weeks off. And keep in mind that when Georgia's playing Missouri on November 9th, which is no gimme game, even though Missouri lost last week, that is an off week for Auburn getting ready for Georgia the following week there. So a lot to kind of keep in mind of the grind and the rigors of the Georgia schedule here to come, and that's one of the reasons why Georgia this week during its bye week has spent as much time as it has getting ready for those games, because Kirby knows as much hype as someone like me is going to put on the cocktail party and beating Florida, that's only the start of the mission for Georgia throughout the month of November. It's our Kroger kickoff here presented by Kroger. And by the way, speaking of really fun stuff going on at Kroger, how about the return of Chef Junior? We haven't talked about this in a while, but I'm glad to be telling you about this again because my kids love this, and in October, your kids can love this too. The creation is dirt pudding cups. Now, in addition to getting the chance to make that at your participating Kroger location, you can also get a recipe card, an apron, a chef hat, a recipe box, and a whisk. Who doesn't need more whisks in their kitchen? You can get a whisk as a part of Kroger Chef Junior here this month as well. So go to KrogerChefJunior.com to find out the location nearest you, participating in the program, and to sign up to be a part of it. So, hope you all have a great weekend. I know you probably will. I am kind of looking forward to settling in and getting a chance to watch some football not involving the Georgia Bulldogs this weekend. I'm sure a lot of you kind of doing the same thing. It's actually a pretty good slate of games, as I kind of mentioned before. I think Auburn LSU is a ton of fun. I think the two non-SEC games, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Badgers lost last week. That doesn't change that for me all that much. And I think that Michigan-Notre Dame is pretty fun here, too. So some pretty good stuff this weekend. I hope you get a chance to relax and enjoy some of it. And on Monday, I need you back here with your game face on, ready to go, because we're going to have an amazing week next week getting ready for Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville, as we learned this morning, in Jacksonville for a few years to come. But the one that matters is this next Saturday, so be ready for it. By the way, with that in mind, Gator Hater Updater, here's what Georgia's playing for to defend the fact that it's now been 1,091 days. We hope to see that number keep climbing. We'll see you Monday right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.